This is a Vantage House production.
Hi folks, welcome back. I'm Chaylin. On behalf of myself and the team, thank you for being part of our global listenership. If you like this episode, please give us a 5-star rating wherever you found us. It really helps us reach more people. And of course, if it's Friday, then this is The Delve. Today we're diving into a modern-day witch hunt.
Just so you understand, it's the single greatest witch hunt in American history, probably in history, but in American history.
No, not that one. This is a real persecution that targets important professions like librarians and teachers by anti-woke mobs. Groups like Moms for Liberty are at the forefront, wielding book bans as their weapon of choice.
The term diversity is misused to deceive children into following a system that fosters division based on demographics and beliefs.
What titles are under fire, you ask? Rasham Sajani's Girls Who Code, Toni Morrison's Beloved, and George M. Johnson's All Boys Aren't Blue, among others. These books, addressing coding for girls, the legacy of slavery, and the explorations of race, gender, and sexual identity, are deemed too radical. It echoes the puritanical spirit of America's first book ban in Quincy, Massachusetts, back in 1637, and the nationwide ban of Uncle Tom's Cabin for allegedly fueling the abolitionist movement. So, it turns out that the morality police is as American as apple pie. Let's have an ad.
Hello?
Hey, did you hear about the call last night?
No, what happened?
So this lady called in. She said it was about 1 a.m, and 2 kids showed up at her door. They wanted to get inside.
Oh no, were they okay?
Well, yeah, no visible signs of distress. Kept saying their mom was all right with it. But get this, they knew the caller's name.
Did she let them in?
No, because they didn't have eyes.
Like the black-eyed children?
No, something worse. Hi, we are your hosts, Etta
and Arlene
of the Paranormal Radio Show. And we want to discuss the anomalies and oddities of this reality with real-life paranormal and strange stories.
The truth is out there.
The focus of these bans? Works primarily by LGBTQ, Black, and women authors that celebrate diverse characters and experiences. These bans are not isolated incidents, but coordinated campaigns, bolstered by certain state legislatures. Madison, let's hear your thoughts on this.
Book bans hit at the core problem of white feminism. These white women in groups like Moms for Liberty are deliberately tearing down people that are one step further away in the privilege hierarchy from their husbands, like other women, LGBTQ folks, people of color, people on the autism spectrum, whether by sexual orientation or race or whatever, in order to bring themselves closer to the power that cis white men like their husbands do hold. Now, I'm sure that many of them don't call themselves feminists, but they feel powerful when they convince themselves that they're, quote, saving or protecting children from corruption by another. And they feel that keeping white children in particular from diverse stories that maybe normalize queer life or confront the brutal history of slavery, that's keeping those children closer to whiteness and to heteronormativity. And I just want these women to know that they will never achieve their freedom by limiting the knowledge of their children. They will never gain power by stripping it from their local librarian. That's not where power comes from. Power is in collective liberation, and power is in the knowledge that comes from understanding the great, big, beautiful, diverse world around you. That's what children need.
PEN America reports significant book bans across several states, with over 40% happening in 33 school districts in Florida alone. Texas has banned 625 books, Missouri 333, Utah, 281, and my home state, Pennsylvania, 186. Yet there's light at the end of the tunnel. States and communities are pushing back. Maryland's Freedom to Read Act, Illinois's Library Systems Act of 2023, and victories like librarian Brookie Parks's in Colorado, signifying a growing resistance to these attacks on our freedom of expression. Today, we're fortunate to have Brookie Parks here with us on the show to discuss her deal with book bans, her fight back, and her optimism for the future. Hi, Brookie. Welcome to The Delve. How's it going today?
Thank you for having me. It's going great so far. How are you?
I'm pretty good. So I want to start this off just asking you, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey to becoming a librarian?
Sure. I have two kids, and when they were young, I used to spend a lot of time taking them into the library to attend story times. Mm. And before I knew much about what was involved in becoming a librarian, I thought, well, that'd be great. That would be a fun job. I soon discovered that it requires a master's degree. And so I started volunteering at the library to make sure that it was a good fit for me. I loved it. I went back to school and pursued my master's in library science. And shortly after that, started working for the Denver Public Library. There, I was working mainly with children and families. And eventually, I moved over into teen services, working at High Plains Library District. And currently, I'm actually working at the University of Denver as a business and economics reference librarian, working with college students. So I've kind of worked with all age groups.
Awesome. Did you have a favorite?
You know, it's really funny. I think every time I was employed, whatever I was doing at the time was my favorite. And it's unusual that it kind of coincided with the age that my children were. So My children were young preschoolers when I was actually working with children and doing story times myself. Mm. And once I started doing teen services, they were high school students. And now that I'm at the University of Denver, they're also college aged now. So it's kind of unusual that it's followed that path, but sure. I've liked every bit of it.
Yeah. I now want to talk about what happened with the reading group that you started. Can you walk us through what happened, how everything unfolded, and, you know, all that juicy stuff?
Sure. So the first thing that I did was kind of start this Read Woke book club. And the idea behind it is not something that I came up with myself. That was actually started by Cicely Lewis, who was school librarian of the year a few years ago at a public school in Georgia. But her reading program has kind of grown, and it's offered nationwide across public libraries as well as public schools. And so I decided that would be a great way to build empathy within the community. And so we started our own version of the Read Woke Book Club. And teenagers would come in every month and they would read books that were focused on a different marginalized community every single month. And then we would discuss those books. And it was really cool to see them come in and think that they weren't going to have anything in common, I guess, with some of the characters in the books. But by the end of it, it was like a light bulb moment where they realized that, oh, I have a lot of stuff in common with this character. And I really love this character. And you could just see like the compassion and the empathy building, like just with, I guess, becoming more aware and more familiar with people that had different circumstances than they did.
Sure.
So I started the Read Woke Book Club, and I started offering some other programs as well for LGBTQ teens and youth of color. And in November of 2021, I actually attended a board meeting with some of my coworkers because we wanted to talk to the board about our library's decision to remain open on Martin Luther King Day. And we had received a lot of feedback from our community. They felt like it was really offensive to them that we would remain open on this day. And so we were trying to communicate that to our board and let them know that, we really needed to close in observance of that day. After that board meeting, we immediately headed back because it was an hour drive for us in order to get up there to attend that board meeting. So we didn't know that the board was also discussing making some policy changes around the type of programs that the library would offer. So it wasn't until a day or two later that I was approached by library leadership, and I was told that I needed to cancel my anti-racism workshop for teens. I also needed to cancel my LGBTQ program for teens that was called Resistance Through History and You, and that I needed to rename my Read Woke book club because the word woke was polarizing.
Wow.
I tried expressing my concern about the censorship to library leadership, and they just would not respond to anything that I said. So I felt like I had no other option than to reach out to my community and make them aware of what was happening so that they could speak up and express their concern or let the board know that these programs are valuable for our community members and our teens. And the very next week, letters started coming in to the board expressing that they wanted the library to offer these kind of programs. I also tried to follow up again and say, these are the program descriptions, because they actually asked me to cancel the programs on the name alone. They didn't even read the description of the program. So I followed up and said, here's the descriptions. Are you still wanting me to cancel these programs? I got no response. The third week, I actually was called in to what I thought was going to be my performance review and instead found an HR representative there with library leadership, and I received a written warning. I went through every bullet point in the written warning and I told them, this is inaccurate, this is wrong. I asked them to remove things and they told me, well, you can write a written rebuttal if you want. And so I said I would do that. A few days later, the letter that I sent out to the community got posted on the Colorado Association of Libraries Intellectual Freedom Committee's listserv and went out statewide. And when that happened, I was like, oh, I'm for sure getting fired now. I've already gotten a written warning. I'm definitely getting fired. There's no way out of this. The week after that, I submitted my written rebuttal, and being the librarian that I am, a 3-page written warning, I responded with 75 pages.
Oh my.
Rebuttal, like basically going back and saying, this didn't happen. Sure. And I would have emails backing it up. See attachment A, see attachment B, all of the emails, all of the evidence proving my point, asking them to remove this.
Oh, I love that.
I submitted the 75-page document. And the very next morning, they called me in and they told me that my services were no longer needed.
Wow.
And that I needed to pack up my desk. And before I left, they actually said, we'd like to help you as you transition to another, you know, position. We'd like to offer you $5,000 to help you if you'll sign this confidential agreement.
Oh.
And at the time, I didn't really look at it because I was like, well, I'm not signing anything. I put it in my folder. I packed up my desk and I left. But the confidential agreement stated that they would pay me $5,000 if I would sign the agreement that had to remain confidential, and I would waive my rights to sue them for violating my civil rights.
Wow. Wow.
So I chose not to sign that agreement. I got legal representation instead.
Good for you.
And I began a 2-year process. Basically, we had to file a complaint with the Colorado Civil Rights Division first.
Mm.
They conducted a year-long investigation. They came back and determined that there was probable cause for discrimination. The Attorney General's Office for Colorado stepped in and filed a complaint against the library district on my behalf. And it was then that the library decided that they wanted to settle.
Mm.
And so for me, it wasn't just about the money. They did have to pay me $250,000 because I was unemployed for 8 months. I nearly lost my house.
Mm-hmm.
They would respond in media interviews saying that I was just a poor employee. So it made it very difficult for me to get another job at another public library in Colorado. So they did pay me the $250,000, but it wasn't just about the money for me. What was important to me was changing that program policy language that stated that the district was not going to offer programs that were polarizing or intentionally inflammatory or programs that were intentionally trying to persuade participants to another point of view, because I felt like library leadership was just using that as a way to get rid of LGBTQ programs or programs for youth of color. Whatever they didn't believe in, they could squash. So there was no formal process. There was no formal criteria that programs needed to meet or anything like that. It was just very subjective. So part of the settlement agreement included that they had to revise the program policy language, and it had to be approved by the Public Library Association. And they also had to agree to forming a program review committee, which would review any programs that librarians came up with and that were denied by leadership. So anytime leadership denies a program, then the program review committee needs to review it. And part of that review includes anonymously surveying librarian staff to get their opinion on whether or not they feel like the program would be valuable to the community, and take that into consideration before then voting as a committee on whether or not they should have that program. So I think my situation was a little different in that it wasn't, you know, just a settlement that involved money. Like, I really wanted that change to be made.
There's like some structural changes there. I want to ask a question about the community that you're working in. Can you tell me a little bit about the makeup of this community?
I think the branch that I worked in, it was located in Erie, Colorado, whereas the entire library district is within Weld County. And like I said, some of the branches are even an hour distance apart driving. So it's very different, I feel, in Erie, Colorado than it is in the other parts of Weld County. Greeley, for example, is much more conservative, I think, than what Erie is. So a lot of the programs, you know, I think were really well received at my branch. However, the Board of Trustees are from Greeley, and they don't have masters in library science. These are former chiefs of police from Fort Lupton running our library board, and they have a very different agenda of how they feel like things should be run than what a library professional would, who's following the standards of the profession to provide services to every member of our community.
Sure. And then you mentioned earlier that there were some members of the community who wrote letters in support of the programs. They said they want to keep them and all that stuff. Did that not make any impact at all?
I think the impact that it made was it made them want to fire me even more.
Angrier?
So they wanted to get rid of me. They really wanted to shut me up. So they saw that I wasn't going to be quiet. They thought a written warning would silence me. It didn't. They thought firing me would silence me. It didn't. You know, it was just something that I felt like it was something that I was willing to fall on my sword over. Because it's very important to me. I'm something that I'm really passionate about. And I just wasn't going to work for a district that wanted to just erase the perspectives and identities of community members that they just don't agree with. That's just not right.
I think what you were doing is admirable, one, but I think it's something that Representative John Lewis used to call it good trouble. You're doing some good trouble there. So obviously, kudos to you. I think book bans, it's been kind of a thing that's been around the country, and but it's been kind of fading out now. I don't think we hear perhaps so much about it. characters, these other topics that are coming up. But why is it so important that we keep fighting against book bans?
Well, I mean, I would respectfully disagree with you that it's kind of fading out. Yeah.
Oh, you might be a little closer to the issue than us.
You know, my attorneys are currently representing librarians in Wyoming as well as in Texas for similar issues. And this is something that school librarians are facing just as much as public librarians and even academic librarians in some states. We're starting to see more and more state bills go up, you know, to try to protect librarians. I mean, we're looking at situations where some librarians are looking at jail time if they leave books on the shelf that community members feel are pornography. It's absolutely ridiculous. So I feel like it's a huge problem and it's continuing. And I think it's really almost just starting to kind of be noticed by our community.
Was there a particular group who instigated this banning or this review?
I mean, there's a few groups that are being formed. Moms for Liberty is one. Mm-hmm. And there's a handful of other groups out there as well. Yeah. I think they operate on fear, basically. And it's politically motivated as well. A lot of these groups that are instigating these book bans make up a very small number of our community. But they're sending requests to have books removed out, lists, like lists of 60 to 100 titles.
Wow.
At once. So this is no longer just an issue of a parent that's concerned about a particular book at their child's school.
Yeah.
This is a small group of people that are coming out and going, hey, let's list these 100 titles, and they're all LGBTQ or BIPOC books, and let's send them to all of the schools, schools that they don't even live in the district of, libraries that they don't even live in the district of. So this is a very small percentage of our community that is trying to restrict these books. And I feel like, you know, if more community members were aware of what was going on and would speak up, there's no question that these books would remain on the shelf.
Right.
So these are just parent groups that are, they're being labeled extremist groups. They're hate groups. And they just do not want any books that are related to LGBTQ or people of color.
Right. And I'm guessing these groups, Moms of Liberty, they haven't actually read any of these books.
Well, that's the other issue is that, yes, many times they don't read the books. So they like to stand up in board meetings for school board meetings as well as public library board meetings and show a page or two or read one paragraph that's completely taken out of context and doesn't reflect the value of the book or the work in its entirety and try to make it seem like, oh, this is pornography or, you know, this is sexualizing our children. And it's completely ridiculous. They haven't even read the books themselves.
Damn. What's the best way to combat these groups, you know, this issue? You've gone through it yourself.
I think it's important, first and foremost, for librarians to speak up, but it's not something that librarians can do alone. Obviously, librarians and library staff are risking losing their jobs. They're being harassed and tormented by some of the community members, depending on the areas that they're living in. They're being called groomers. It's ridiculous. So if we don't have community members standing up behind us, it's really difficult for just one person to make a change. And then I think paying attention as community members to what our boards are doing. So for the public libraries, I know you can go on most public libraries' websites and you can see the meeting minutes. You can see their agendas to see what they're talking about, if they're going to be talking about banning a book or if they're going to be talking about other types of issues. You can attend those board meetings in person. You can attend those board meetings virtually. You can submit written statements that will be read at the board meetings, and just reviewing those meeting minutes to see what happened, letting your librarians know that these programs or books are valuable, checking the books out so that they have a high circulation rate, so that we can say, no, look how many people are checking these out. These are being used. They're valuable resources, are things that the community could do to try to help support. And then just paying attention to like those state bills. You know, I think Colorado right now is working on trying to get a bill passed that will kind of protect librarians and provide some kind of structure around dealing with a request to ban a book. What, you can't just remove a book because somebody asks for it to be removed. There's a process and it needs to stay on the shelf while we're going through that process.
Yeah.
A few states have already started passing bills that ban book bans altogether. So, okay. You know, we need to be paying attention to those bills and pay attention to our schools, pay attention to our public libraries, and start speaking up.
Yeah, this might be a weird question, but are there some books that probably shouldn't be banned or should not be in a library, a public library?
You know, I feel like there's a book for everybody in the library. If a library doesn't have a book that offends at least one person, we're probably not doing our job. I feel like as long as a book has up-to-date information, so of course, we're not going to want to put books on the shelves that have outdated medical information, that kind of thing, that's providing misinformation. So I feel like we need to have all types of books on the shelves for all members of the community. And it's really up to each person to decide what they want to read or what they want their child to read.
Yeah.
So if I don't want my child to read something, maybe I feel like, oh, that's maybe, you know, a little too much for their age, depending on my child. I can make that decision and I can dictate that for my child, but it's not anybody's responsibility to do that for everyone. And that's where the problem comes in, is when you have somebody coming in that says, we're going to remove this from the shelf or remove this program so that nobody can have access to it. That's where we come into a very dangerous situation.
Yeah. Really, really funny note here. One of my first jobs in high school, I was a page at a library.
Really?
Yeah. So nice. That's pretty funny. I like to, library power. I like to end these things asking people what's something that makes them hopeful for the future. You've obviously been through the ringer with this, but do you see some light out there? What's something that you're excited about?
It's really exciting to see people starting to get involved in this, and it's on a few different levels. One thing that I did recently, I was actually invited to participate in a webinar for a teen organization. And it was really exciting to see teenagers asking these same types of questions. What happens if a librarian doesn't do what they're told to remove a book? Can they face any kind of retaliation? Yes, they can. I lost my job. I was fired for just that, you know? So seeing teenagers start to take an interest in this, seeing journalists and the media start to see that there's an issue here and start keeping an eye on this problem gives me hope. And obviously having organizations out there in the community that are willing to speak on your behalf and advocate for this issue or for the librarians standing up for this gives me hope. And having recourse available. Yeah. My attorneys were fabulous and they really, really cared about this issue. It wasn't just another case to them.
Yeah.
They're kind of more of a civil rights focused firm. And so they took it very seriously and have continued to stay very involved in doing things like being keynote speakers for events or, you know, presenting at conferences alongside me. Yeah. So it's something that I feel like they really are passionate about and wanted to make sure that this stops happening. So starting to see like those legal recourse resources, I guess, become available to more librarians so that they kind of know that they can speak up and that there will be support for them as well. So
sure.
Just hoping that, you know, the community really, you know, pays attention and continues speaking up as well, because there were a lot of members of my community that stood up, and that it made me feel good to know that like I'm doing the right thing for them and they're trying to support me as well. So
yeah, no, I think you did something incredible. You're probably a hero to that community. So good for you. Yeah.
Well, thank you. I don't feel like a hero. I had to do, I just felt like that was my obligation. That's what my profession is built upon. And having kids of my own and seeing how they struggle on a daily basis,
sure,
the library was just not a place that was going to exclude them.
Yeah, I love that. Rookie Parks, I really, really, really appreciate this. What an incredible story. Thanks so much again for coming on The Delve.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Chaylin. I've really enjoyed talking with you today.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for tuning in. What an incredible episode. A huge thank you to Brookie Parks for our inspiring story, and to Gene and Madison for their excellent production work. Special shout outs to Ignacio, Javon, and DeVell and Sound. I'm Chaylin. This is The Delve, and I'll catch you next time.